Step inside these hallowed halls of the Red Light Library, where us librarians review short erotica. It gets the short end of the stick when it comes to criticism and review because, well, in the end, it's porn. This podcast reviews adult content that has frank discussions of sexual content, adult language, and, well, basically anything under the sun that certain publishing houses will allow. If that's something you can't legally listen to or don't want to listen to, back out now.
Welcome back, dear patron, to the Red Light Library. I'm your host, Jared, joined by Diane.
Hello, Jared.
Hello, Diane. We've got quite the story for our listeners today.
Indeed we do. Let's say we found this somewhere hidden in the stacks in a dark corner that no one ever goes to. Somewhere between Halloween and the winter holidays.
It was so dark and damp in that corner, I think we found some mushrooms growing on this book.
Oh, so many mushrooms, Jared. So, patrons, I would like to introduce you to our latest find. It's called The Thanksgiving Hot Springs Seder, an erotic fairy tale in the Seder and the School Marm Collection, Book 1, by Jacqueline Deterre. So, Jared, where do we even start?
Well, we start by assuring our delighted listeners, our delighted patrons, that much like the trend with most of the holiday episodes of the Red Light Library, this story has absolutely nothing to do with Thanksgiving.
Absolutely not. Thanksgiving is more of, I don't know, just a way to set it in a real world place and time, I suppose.
I mean, it might be. I also, at this point, I have a theory that this is not the real world, because, so the story begins with this date, like a very specific date. It says October 13th, 1975, 2 days before American Thanksgiving. In 1975, as with every year, Thanksgiving was in November.
Yes, since Lincoln declared it so.
Ever since George Washington gave the proclamation and trees grew out of the ground and the great flood waters receded.
There hasn't been a Thanksgiving in October in over 400 years.
I know. So, this Thanksgiving, 2 days before American Thanksgiving, evidently, either there's something that this author, Jacqueline Deterre, this author knows that I don't, or this is an alternate universe, which actually kind of plays in well with the content, which we're never really sure is supernatural or not. Speaking of satyrs.
Yes. It's, I'll just, should I read the summary at first and then we can start doing an overview?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here is the summary, dear listener. It's Thanksgiving 1975 and young Allison has found her way to a free love commune in the Cascade Mountains. Her new friend Susie has a surprise for our innocent. She leads her to a secret hot springs and offers up a naked and alone Allison to the satyr. Once Allison has experienced the love of a satyr, this Thanksgiving may be her last among the bearded hippie boys.
I like that summary introduces a lot more like drama and tension than there actually is in the story.
Yeah. Allison's not also exactly like that... innocent.
No. Hey Diane, do you wanna tell our lovely patrons how this story opens?
It opens up with Allison, well, she's hitchhiking up to this free love commune. She's gotten on board a trucker That's a trucker, not a logger. But she's gotten a ride in a trucker's cab, and she's paying with her favorite currency of blowjobs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks for the ride. Jumps off, and she's like, he took a little longer because I think he has a girlfriend at home, so it took a little longer for me to get him going.
She definitely hitched a ride on that trucker, for sure.
And several others.
apparently. So, I guess we could do Gavin's favorite part, which is reading the opening.
Oh, yes.
The opening paragraph, which reads as follows. The logging truck driver clutched painfully the fine strands of red along the nape of Allison's neck when he came. It was her experience with long-haul truck drivers that they came quickly while collecting on Allison's preferred hitchhiking currency. But this guy went home to his girlfriend every night after a day in the mountains, and he took some coaxing to climax. He tasted better than the last two truck drivers she had sucked off, and his cock nowhere near as funky.
There are a lot of things that I really liked about this erotica. Like, I liked the descriptions. Mm-hmm. I liked how it's very cinematic at points. But one of the things that's just so tough is knowing how much these people smell.
Oh, God, yes. You're so right. Oh, man.
That's the thing.
It's dead stop. I just have to say that, like, I don't know whether I'm the target demographic for this story, because this, you know, this story is about free love and hippies having, you know, orgies and taking mushrooms. It's 1975. The Vietnam War, I think, is still happening.
Yep, still is.
Well, it might be in... No, it is mentioned. A war is mentioned. I don't know if it's the Vietnam War. Again, this might still be an alternate reality of some sort. And it's... So, there are certain aspects to this story that do not appeal to me. But, man, that stank is probably the most... I can't even imagine.
It's...
I mean, maybe I'm just bougie and privileged. Like, there's no doubt about that, but I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Like, I'll say this as someone who has gone to a couple of hot springs, including some that are in the wild, gone hiking up to these places. You can't exactly get really clean in them. Like, unless you're bringing soap and, like, really scrubbing down, you're not going to be super clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, well, they're really relaxing, though.
Oh, no, I'm absolutely sure of that. Craft-wise, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, Diane. I think that there are some really good points to this story. There's some really good qualities to it. It has a lot of really... fascinating inventive descriptions. It definitely, I think, it delivers on the sex in a way that is very visceral. It's very bodily and very, you know, forward and in your face in a way that many of the eroticas that we have stocked in the library kind of just rely on a, you know...
Like, you know what you're doing. You've had sex before.
It's a Mad Libs sort of situation where, you know, you just change a few words. It's the same descriptions. It's the same kind of structure over and over again. Here, like, there were some chances taken. I think that was, and I think that actually mattered, and it ended up making a difference. But as patrons, as listeners will find as we go forward, the problem is that this story, craft-wise, is very scrambled. It's very confusing. Lots of characters are introduced that don't really get followed up on. Just almost a character every paragraph.
you know, the some of the sentence level things is that it can get a little confusing. It feels very written very quickly and then not edited. There are typos abound, so that suggests that it was, again, very hastily put together, even though it burns very bright, but not for very long. So
yeah,
why don't we get into
let's get in with it. So Allison arrives at the hippie commune in the Cascade Mountains, and she arrives via trucker, as we've explained, and she kind of hops off, and she's wearing her cowboy boots and her skirt and like a poncho and her one of her ex-boyfriend's dog tags from the war. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I got my backpack, I've got my two legs, I'm just gonna hike on up. But then she takes like 2-3 steps and she gets picked up by the people at the commune in their van. They just went to town to grocery shop for Thanksgiving in October.
Mm-hmm. Apparently because their heat was going to be cut off for whatever reason.
I think so, what they said is that this was pretty much their last chance to go into town before the snowstorms hit and blocked off the roads.
Oh, okay.
And that they would pretty much be cut off from the rest of the world, so they were making that final trip to try and get everything before there was some snow on the ground. Or serious snow.
Mm-hmm. Serious.
Not serious snow.
The most studious snow. Snow with a PhD.
Oh my gosh, this is a doctor.
Dr. Snow. Dr. Snow honestly sounds like a soap opera name, though. That'd be fun.
That's not me. I'm Dr. Snow. That is my twin brother, Dr. Sleet.
Oh, the evil Dr. Sleet.
Oh, yeah, the evil Dr. Sleet. Devious bastard.
Diane, the problem is that we've now created a fiction that I want more than reading this.
Oh, no.
So you had a note here, and I'm very curious. So what is our, how would you describe our protagonist, Allison?
She is, I put down a note in my own stuff, and my own little notes on Google Docs, and to truly understand the character of Allison, understand that she is Queen Hippie Chick of Hippie Land, and she is the coolest drifter to ever drift. And she's like the Strider of the hippies, like Aragorn, son of Arathorn. It's Allison, daughter of who knows what, Hippie Queen.
Hippie Queen is actually a very apt description, I think. I got this sense that Allison is this kind of, I don't know, she's like this kind of mesh of several different, like, idealized women stereotypes.
Yeah, she...
Does that make sense?
She came off as...
I think you put, you mentioned, Manic Pixie Dream Girl or Panic,
yeah,
or whatever.
She comes off like that, but she comes off as very ethereal, otherworldly, just drifting in and out, and like the very much the queen hippie of Hippie Kingdom, and strange, but I think it works in this, because usually these sort of characters I get so annoyed with, because it's like, if they're so great and perfect, why are they settling for, you know, whatever schlubby guy or whatever, like, basic normal life? And it's very clear she doesn't. She just marches off to the beat of her own drum.
No, absolutely. Allison has a great deal of agency, and throughout the story she makes her own choices.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, which partner she wants to get with, which where she wants to go, how she wants to live her life.
I'll definitely get into that later, because our girl here, Jacqueline de Terre, she did not let me down. I was already dreading something. I was like, oh no, this is going to happen. Oh great, we're going to have to deal with this. And it didn't happen. And I was so pleased. I was like, all right, you go. Gold star for you, Jacqueline.
Well, I'm very curious.
We'll get there.
But I want to read this description of Allison, which I think pretty well sums up what we've been talking about. Allison wore well-fitted cowboy boots, a diaphanous dress that showed her ride-catching legs, a woolen poncho, and her last boyfriend's dog tags. She had long red hair that she dreamed of dyeing black, a narrow face, and slender hips, along with a shoulder satchel laden with all her worldly possessions. Food, alcohol, a dog-eared copy of A Canticle for Leibowitz, a pair of jeans, a couple sweaters and shirts, even Italian-made hiking boots, but no bras or panties, and two boxes of tampons.
That's Allison. as I put, she is the strider of hippies. She's going out into the wild. Like, I could fully...
Oh, and speaking of hippies, here comes that VW microbus coming
beep,
up.
Beep.
That
you get. Yeah, she gets picked up, and there's so many characters. They get named, but it's kind of like they show up and then drift out. Much like Allison, drifting in and out of society. But
I'm glad you mentioned that, because what it almost felt like. So this is worth mentioning. I think you mentioned this at the top. This story is a prequel, which I don't think we knew when we picked it up out of its damp and
movie corner. Oh, I had no idea.
It is a prequel. Yeah, it's a prequel to another Seder installment. So I imagine for some reason that this was probably written afterwards. So if you had the context of the actual book, then you would understand this prequel better. But without that context, a lot of this kind of feels like almost kind of notes, planning notes, outlines for a novel, where it's like, oh, here are all these characters that I'm using, and here are some descriptions and some action. It's kind of just this roughing out of what a novel could be, without going in depth. It's kind of like, here's a character, here's a character, here's a character, without fleshing any of those characters out.
There is something very interesting. It's in Jacqueline de Terre's author bio, and it seems to indicate that she was originally writing the sequel to this prequel, or she was writing the first book. Or the first erotica.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got so taken with this idea for the prequel that just pushed through. And so it was like she was writing the other one, and then she was wrote the prequel like halfway through. Because she's, oh gosh. I don't know if I should read the whole author bio or just get to the part that I'm talking about.
I think we'll probably get there when we talk about Jacqueline de Terre, but it sounds like Jacqueline de Terre does what she wants.
Oh, yes. She absolutely, her personality comes through. It's a really good author bio. Back to Allison, and she goes and...
She gets a ride. The hippies from the commune. And she meets a handful of characters. So we have a man with a magnificent mustache. Handlebar mustache. We have we have a mustache. We have a long-haired blonde boy. We have a woman.
Yeah, this is Susie,
I think. And then Rick. Her partner Rick.
And like the pretty much they're all Mustache Man is Art, and they're all kind of talking about, you know, like, hey, where'd you come from? And Allison's response is Montana by way of Northern California. And Susie makes a joke of ocean not as warm as you thought it would be, huh? Kind of thing. Like, oh, you were going out to the beach and then you got, it was so cold. And Allison laughs and she's smiling. She's like, yeah, it was so fucking cold. Which, side note, it's fucking cold.
I mean, I absolutely.
Yeah, I visited a friend in California once and we went to the beach and we were in like Northern California. And of course, I was used to beaches in Florida. And so I was like, fuck this, I'm jumping in. I'm running in. I'm going to wade in the water. And there was like a restaurant on the cliff and there were people out on like the patio overlooking the ocean. And it's kind of becoming sunset. It's really beautiful. And I like kind of run into the water and I like it echoed because I screamed so loud. It was fuck. And people were laughing and laughing. And I had to like, and of course my pants were wet because I was wearing jeans that I rolled up like thigh down. I was soaked and I had to go and walk up the beach back to the car.
And you were just, you were probably wearing like icicle pants.
That's what it felt like.
So. No, like if you want warm water, you gotta go to the South, which is what I'm used to, as I am from the South. Well, the Southeast. I don't
Southeast. warmer than Northern California.
I'm over here in the Southeast.
Yeah, and.
So
they're traveling. She's talking about like, oh yeah, I went over here, and they're telling her all about the commune and it sounds really nice. And they all spill out of the van with all of their groceries and everything. And they just like kind of take Allison into the cabin and it's a nice cabin.
So Wayne mentions, you know, there's cows and chickens, two canoes for fishing, a pebble and rock beach, and the snow is already in the mountains and the sky hangs low. This is Wayne clearly loved his mountain commune and his enthusiasm was infectious. There's this giant barn. There are there's a cabin in the woods that isn't spooky.
We have bedrooms. We have a kitchen.
On and on and on. This, which amazes me in a sense because there aren't that many people living here, and somehow this place is being kept up.
It's almost, again, it very much feels like it's super idyllic, a hidden pocket of perfection, which is, like, super protected. And it's like there's 11 people that Allison meets in the cabin, and there's 5 girls, 6 men, and 3 of each. So 3 of the girls and 3 of the men are clearly couples. And there's this one guy, Seth, and he's one of the guys without a girl. And
oh, Seth. Of course.
It's like even perfection has to have those little mars to make it perfect. And Seth is our flaw in this perfect world. And I was, as soon as he's described, like he's had a creepy kind of small man intensity that did nothing for Allison either. This was the moment where I thought, oh no, we're going to have a problem. And I thought, yeah, this is what I thought. So Jacqueline Duterte, she's going to, like, the best that's going to come out of this situation is attempted assault and rape. Like, it's not going to happen. Maybe the satyr's going to jump in and save her. But I was like, this guy is going to do something bad. And that was the moment where I was like, oh, no. Because I was having a good time reading these descriptions and how, like, it's like, I'm getting into this. And then I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And the whole conversation, it's like Seth keeps interjecting and is really creepy while Allison's just kind of like talking about what she does and that she's an all-natural girl and she doesn't take birth control.
They're like, well, how do you keep from making little free love babies? And she says,
anal.
Seth's jaw dropped. You were my dream girl.
He's as nasty as he sounds, baby, Susie laughed. He likes his girls bent over the woodpile.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Seth is the closest thing to an antagonist that the story has, even though there's not, I don't think, enough structure in this plot to really say that it follows, I mean, clearly it doesn't follow any of, like, Freytag's pyramid. Seth is, it's interesting that you say that, because I was also expecting there to be a very distinct problem with Seth. And Seth does return, like, he doesn't
it's not like he shows up once.
Go away. He returns as, like, a... I wonder if Seth, being the kind of repugnant figure that he is what plays into Allison's decision at the end, to join a commune of a different sort.
Yeah,
but we'll get there.
One of the things that it's kind of the... I don't even know how to describe it. It's that Seth is so mundane and human in all of the worst ways. And I think that's the comparison.
Well, I think he's not glorified, where a lot of the other... And I wonder if that's also just like Allison takes a liking to some of the people. Like, for instance, Art has this, you know, glorious mustache, and Susie's very touchy-feely hug, you know, she's always hugging Allison and touching Allison.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, Rick, who's baby, like a sweetheart as well in his own way, and Catherine, mushroom lady.
It's kind of Seth. I mean, maybe this is just kind of a reflection of idealism, and this is me reading too much into it, I'm sure, but this might be like a reflection of idealism and how that affects our psyche and our perceptions, in the sense that all these people are normal. Like, there's nothing really exceptional about any of them, but the fact that Seth is not glorified for his normalness is what makes him so repugnant. What would be amazing for any of these other people, because Allison clearly likes them, are the exact same things that make Seth such a unpleasant figure in this story. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
I'm not sure.
But
I don't know.
I don't know.
And Allison kind of, they're like, all right, so here's, like, what did you bring for our hippie commune? Like, what do you have in your bag? Let's all lay out all our spoils and figure out what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Allison...
They felt like teenagers.
Yeah, they did. Kind of, they're like, yo, what did you get from your old man? Kind of thing, like, sneaking off into their clubhouse. And Allison laid out her contribution on the table. 6 packs of dried Japanese noodles, 2 packs of Tang, a half a loaf of white bread, an open package of American cheese. What are you, a 14-year-old runaway? Nope, brought these along. The bottles clinked as she removed them. 2 26-ounce bottles of tequila. Yes, you are a dream girl.
Oh, dear.
She's the coolest. She's hippie queen.
I will say that, like, this story does what it's... Mm-hmm. This story does what it sets out to do really well, but I have a hard time with sections like this, and reading it again now, kind of figuring out where that fine line between, like, parody and, like, earnest effort is. This isn't to say that parody can't be earnest effort, but this kind of, like, genuine article versus this kind of, I'm kind of making the movements of a certain era, and it's...
Yeah.
It's weird, this kind of free love, I'm going to use, you know, baby a lot, and oh, you're, you know, slang, and oh, here are some mushrooms, and it's a commune. I feel like it's kind of getting at that hippie aesthetic and clothing an erotica in that aesthetic more than it is actually setting it there.
Oh, no,
you can disagree
I definitely,
with that, if you think.
Setting would definitely include the smells. This is very, this is kind of a cleaner. Yes.
The smells are the setting.
This kind of is a very clean, like, oh, look at this. They're so cool. Look at how free lovey they are in some ways. But it is well crafted.
Oh, it is. It is well crafted. But I wonder, now this is not fair to the story, but a conjecture. I wonder if it's also a question of was it assumed that the story needed a free love aspect to get to the concept of polyamory? Was that part of it? The idea of, oh, well, I can't talk about couples having sex with each other without this constraint? I don't really know. I don't think so.
I think this might have been more of an excuse to get people into the woods without anyone wondering where they disappeared to. So having, mm-hmm. you know, runaways and drifters hanging out and just, you know, they come and go as they please. So no one's going to be looking for anyone who goes missing. Especially in the given time period. Yes. It definitely establishes her as someone who no one would go looking for, really, because it's like, well, yeah, she doesn't want to be found, kind of thing. It's like, she's probably hiding out in the woods in a tent somewhere. And definitely. So, logically, or storyline-wise, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense why no one would be like, hey, where did Allison go to? Like, we should go looking for her. They'll just be like, oh, she probably just drifted off. I definitely do see her point and agree with her in some respects, because I have friends who love going camping, and some of them are like, you're not really camping unless you had to hike in like 2 or 3 miles with your stuff on your back. And other people who are like, camping is renting a cabin in the woods. That's camping.
And that's the thing, like, camping is a lovely experience that many people share, and you do it how you want to enjoy it, which is, I think, Allison wants really something. I mean, on some level, it's also a reflection of the times where people are trying to, you know, search out a way of finding what is real for them, trying to find something that really kind of find their own piece of reality, really, since it was such a disillusioned era in American history. So they're all this to say, yes. I don't like camping, and that's fine.
I have enough camping disaster not stories that it's they're very entertaining, but it's not everyone's cup of tea, but it's definitely Allison's cup of tea. Perhaps we shall say mushroom tea. Mushroom tea.
Speaking of tea.
There is another woman in the commune, and she kind of like shows up gets out of the kitchen, and she has her big kettle of hot water, and she's like, hey, tea's ready. And it's mushroom tea, and, you know, it's the kind of fun mushroom, the trippy mushroom kind, which is a real thing, in case people didn't know, mm-hmm. thought this was made up or some nonsense, it is real. And pretty much Catherine, she's mushroom girl, and they're like, oh, she's like knows so much about mushrooms. And Seth says something dumb, like she's like a horticulturist, but with mushrooms. And it's like, there's a word for that.
There's a word for that.
Yes.
The word is mycologist.
And,
and
yeah, so pretty much, yeah, you go ahead.
I wanted, okay, well, you know, Catherine, the woman, kind of goes into this kind of rhapsody about mushrooms. She says, in the spring we gather morels, but this time of year there's a big money in chanterelles and pine mushrooms, and our friend, yep. the xylocobin.
That's here. The one. Xylocobin? That's the one.
That's a word.
For the mushroom tea that she's serving to get them all high.
it's, I mean, it's another thing where it's like, hey, let's celebrate the fact that we have a new person coming to our commune. Let's all hit on her and then, like, let's all drink mushroom tea and hallucinate. Like, that's, this is kind of what I mean where the Jacqueline Deterre is kind of, like, hitting the high points of, like, oh, this is a thing for a hippie free love commune.
Yeah,
oh, this
you
is
definitely don't see them, you know,
commune.
Mucking out the barn or milking the cows or feeding the chickens or collecting eggs or any of the hard work. This is the, these are the fun, idyllic, they're drinking mushroom tea, they're having sex everywhere. It's kind of a, this is the idyllic high points. Allison never has to work for them.
This is the Reader's Digest kind of. Well, I mean, I don't know how much sex is in Breeder's Digest. There we go. Version of, I guess, hippie free love, because again, there is no time, as you said, for, you know, milking cows, because literally,
pretty much,
sex,
it's like
the entire
wake
story.
Up, go have sex, eat some food, go have sex. Sleep because you had way too much sex.
This story is only, I think, about 15 pages, and Allison has sex, counting the blowjob at the beginning, maybe six times.
It's a lot. There is a lot packed in there.
It's a lot.
So they all toast Allison, Allison's fortunous coming, the coming of the hippie queen, with their mushroom tea, and then Susie and Catherine are kind of like flanking her, sitting down, and they're giggling, and Susie's all touchy-feely, and pretty much they're like, oh, we should go, and like right in front of Allison, they're like, oh, wait, we should go and take her to the hot spring so that way she can have some fun times with Sater. And
it's a kind of indoctrination
for the ladies, of course, only the ladies
commune, I guess, in a way. It's just kind of,
we assume,
yeah, well, we assume because this
yeah,
free love commune is
that's
really
the weird
straight
part. It is
just putting that out,
I mean,
there,
let's say straight for men. Because women can get all touchy-feely.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Like,
no.
Purely,
the men appear to be
heterosexual. It is very strange. You would think there's would be a little more flexibility in that. But there apparently isn't.
It's, yeah. So they all drink the mushroom tea and they toast, and the men are all kind of salivating, really,
fresh
over
blood?
This kind of this new
yeah,
I don't want to say fresh,
that's
meat,
definitely how it comes,
yeah,
off though,
because Allison, you know, does maintain agency. Yeah, no, it definitely kind of, you know, these circling wolves, because, you know, Allison maintains agency throughout, but it does feel very kind of and one of the characters, I think it's Susie, says, you know, sorry boys, I get her first, and then, you know, then you can have her afterwards. And and she tells Allison that, you know, let's take this kind of loop around. We need to take the back long way, because if they know where we're going, they'll follow. And it's this kind of, that felt kind of uncomfortable to me,
felt,
but again, I'm
it sort of felt like,
I have
the,
to say that
every single anime has the hot springs anime episode or long running ones, and it felt like that, where it's like
the
boys being boys, they're gonna go and spy on the girls, ha ha ha, isn't it funny, and then the girls beat him up, ha ha ha,
isn't it funny?
It's funny? Like, none of this is funny.
That is funny.
But it's just like really, really weird. I mean, you can always appreciate the twists where it's like the guys are like, oh no, oh gosh, we can't look. Like, whatever you do. And the girl's like, hey, do you guys have some soap? Do you have an extra towel? Like, those kind of shenanigans are fun, but there's always the pervert guy. But in this case, all the guys are the pervert guys.
It's Seth.
Yeah.
It's mostly Seth, but yeah, all the guys. This in this very heterocentric commune. So.
Yeah, because Susie takes Allison to the hot spring, and it's kind of like, and it's a tiny little hot spring. It doesn't smell of sulfur, and that's because I did some research because I was really interested. And if I did the research, and so did Jacqueline Dutaire, did the research. But if a hot spring is shallow enough, the chemical reaction that produces the sulfur smell does not occur. So this hot spring is just shallow enough to not have that chemical reaction in the water. And so it's really interesting. It's almost mm-hmm. like
I mean, that's...
this is a perfect, perfect piece mm-hmm. of heaven out in the Cascade Mountains that's watched over by a god.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to meet that forest god.
A woodland deity. So Allison, you know, makes out with Susie, and then Susie leaves her to kind of experience the satyr. And Allison's like, what is the satyr? Is that another guy? And Susie's just like, you'll see. So she leaves Allison, and Allison, you know, strips and gets in the hot springs. At this point, the mushrooms are starting to take effect, and she's just kind of soaking in the warmth from the hot spring, and you know, just kind of
tripping a time, out, kind of washing up,
you know, tripping out. At which point, she meets.
It's not really a meet cute.
Well, meets is not quite the word, but there's actually, which we're skipping over a lot of this description. I have to say again, the writing in this story is actually really well. It's actually very good. The writing is very good. The descriptions are actually quite good. It's just that the macro structure of the thing is very cluttered. It's very confusing. But the actual like descriptions are good. Is if they were just put in
a little more organized.
Yeah, a little more organized. This section, for instance, after Susie leaves. The water was hot. Allison was 3 days since her last bath, and she collapsed into the knee-deep water. Her whole body sank under the warmth, and she lay there, looking up into the clouds, just her cheeks, nose, and eyes above the surface for some time. The mushrooms had definitely kicked in. She lay soporific, feeling a tingle in the gaps between her toes, her thighs, and even her thumb and little finger. And so there's this feeling of just deep calm with this. And then we get into the satyr. First, she realized that despite the fact that she lay in slightly sulfurous water, she smelt something that she only gradually realized had been present the whole time, something musky that quickened her breathing. Then she saw him. Someone was watching her from up in the tree above her. He actually lay across the branches like a jaguar, staring at her with eyes as blue as the bottom of a deep hole in the snow. Of course his eyes are blue. Of course they are.
Of course they are. This is a paranormal erotica romance. They all have blue eyes here.
Also, holy shit, Diane. When you talked about, like, the stank, this guy is smellable. He is sensible from up in a tall tree while she's down in a sulfur pool. Holy shit, man.
And she is into it.
No, she's real into it. Good for her. You'd have to be. Otherwise, you just like fall over from this like skunk man.
Yeah. And at first, she thinks this is just a tall dude, a 7 foot tall dude wearing a wolf pelt and jeans. And she's like, huh, that's really weird. Wolves haven't been around in.
Fucking getting into Inuyasha here now, so.
Yes, speaking of anime mm-hmm. and hot spring tropes. and.
It's
He's got a magical penis.
Yes, he has a magical penis, which. is only described as humongous, enormous, gigantic, among other things. But yes. This is...
Of course, this is interesting. We don't know Allison's cup size. We don't know the size of her mm-hmm. breasts. We don't know if they're big or small. I'm assuming small because she's described as very slender. Mm-hmm. But we sure know Sater's dick mm-hmm. size. We know the size of his cock. It's huge.
Allison is this kind of tiny...
waif.
You know, wraith-like girl who can take a giant dick and enjoys it. I don't know if that...
Oh, she is a forest nymph.
Mm-hmm. She is... She knows how to climb that wood, honestly. We get into... I think this is... As you said, the wolf pelt is where we start to get into this blurring. We never really know whether the satyr, this is the satyr, is supernatural or not. And, for instance, this is where we actually get it. Part of Allison assumed that this man was from the commune, and she had simply not met him yet. He wore jeans that were worn white on the thighs and a jacket she at first took to be fake fur, gray and black. But the guard hairs jutting out from over his shoulders gave away what it really was. Allison had only ever seen a wolf pelt once. A friend of her brother had shot one up near the Canadian border a few years back. There were no wolves left in Montana or in Washington State, so Allison then went to assuming that her stalker was from Canada, having perhaps wandered down the way wolves were known to do. So, he's got a wolf pelt. There are no wolves around.
Could this mayhaps be a werewolf? Is this a wolf? A werewolf?
I mean, that's
we
not...
don't know.
It's, I mean, that's actually kind of closer to what this person, creature, hybrid, cryptid thing is. Because, oh, God, Diane, this line right here. But he's a lot more like a werewolf than he is a satyr, frankly. Satyr is kind of used loosely.
I was fully hoping for either the Greek or Roman interpretation of satyr, where the Greek version is horse ears and a tail, and the Roman version is the typical goat legs and horns. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, oh, we're going to have this. This is going to be really weird, but pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, but no, it's just... It's a tall anime pretty boy. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank goodness the anime doesn't have smell-o-vision yet.
High heaven. It's... Oh, God. Like, so... this is the line that kills me, where I was just like, oops, yeah, we're still in this hippie commune, aren't we? She was busy constructing in her mind a narrative for this stranger involving his being a return draft dodger with a symbolic wolf pelt.
That is pretty.
Holy shit. Like, that's not the line I was talking about, but that... If we're going to talk about, like, we're hitting the high points here of the hippie free love thing. When he reached out, grasped the branches either side of him, and lowered himself to the ground, his reach must have been 10 feet. What?
Before
his toes, he wore no boots, and his toenails were like
talons. All the better
like
to climb up trees with, Jared.
Touched the ground.
Oh, we're doomed. God. He's like a bear. He can't escape.
Thank you, Diane. No, I know
bears
I can't
can
escape
climb.
From there.
yes. Ain't no place to hide.
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf. It's, you can't get away from it. It's, so again, like the toenails talons thing. Oh no, you broke your leg. Toenails talons thing is, I think it's another point in the direction of, is this guy actually human or is he just.
Possibly both.
Really dirty. Like really unkempt.
Allison is.
Maybe both. We don't know.
Those blue eyes.
Allison doesn't care, though. Allison is into it. Allison.
And he has a bush.
Allison likes big men, men who were at home in the bush and had few words. And this man was 7 feet tall and had an appropriately massive. Has an appropriately massive erection forming in his genes. Oh, and then it's just sex. Yeah. The rest
one
of the
after
story,
the other
which,
after the
we're
other.
53% through this, so like literally half the story is just sex. It's all sex. So, so how does this
pretty
this,
much he just takes
this
out
hot
his
springs
penis
tryst
and as soon
go,
as it
Diane.
Just it doesn't even breach the entrance of the vagina and she's already coming like a freight train. It's like there she goes. And they don't even talk. They're just like banging it out. Banging it out.
Yeah, there's no... Which I kind of... I felt a little... I mean,
she's very into it. She very much is like, oh, that's a
oh,
dick.
Oh, yeah.
It
is consensual
now mine.
100%.
I also like... wondered, though, because, like, again, no words were exchanged. There was no talk. There was no discussion. And, you know, she's kind of floating in this pool high on mushrooms. And he just, like, hops down from a tree and is like, here's my dick. And she's like, cool. So I don't... I felt a little weirded out by that. Subsequent encounters...
They just have this deep connection through the wild. She's a forest nymph and he's a forest god. And clearly this is what it is.
And they... rub sticks together and make far. His eyes were otherworldly, clouded with lust. Then he knelt in the gravel, his cock slipping from her grasp. He grabbed her around the lower back and thighs, lifting her and depositing her with her ankles in the air in 6 inches of steaming water. Then the tip of his cock touched the lips of her pussy, grazing her clitoris the way a hornet would graze your ankle. And Allison orgasmed as if she had been stung. So that's an example of one of those descriptions that are, I think, really inventive. It's very,
oh, yeah.
It's very visceral. It's very like, oh, I know exactly. I don't know if it necessarily makes the sex seem pleasurable, but it's intense.
That's like, okay, I'm getting the intensity of this. It's I don't know if I'm into it, but I understand. I've got it.
So using,
pretty much, they get through the entire sex, all of that, and he kind of smiles, and they're, like, laughing, having a good time. They haven't spoken at all. He smiles and then leaves, and it's, like, as if he was never there. He's gone among the trees.
He just kind of vanishes, because, like, they have sex, like, I don't know, three ways to Sunday, just to begin with, because, like, he's got her on her back, like, holding her by her thighs, and he's, like, using the floating qualities of the water to just kind of use her like a cock slave, basically, just kind of in, out, in, out, and then she's loving it, moving, and then... yeah, no, he gets done with her and just, you know, he finishes and just kind of, like, leaves her. And she's kind of catching her breath and, like, looks around and then, nope, he's gone. He's vanished.
And she's kind of this could have, like, she could, if it weren't for the fact that she's, like, she could still smell his stank.
Mm-hmm. And she could probably, like, find him again from that.
Yeah, it's just like, I could still feel everything, so, like, I'm pretty sure this happened, but otherwise it's like I imagined it.
If not for her swollen vagina and the scent of him like a pelt laid over her, Allison might have imagined the whole episode. Hey,
that's some thick stink.
Hey, quick poll. Swollen vagina. Thing? Or... I mean, he's got a giant dick and she's tiny. So, like...
Yeah, so I guess possible. Plus, she's constantly saying, like, she's not having vaginal sex because that's her birth control. So, I mean, she could be sore.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, no, that's actually a very good point because she's only been having anal sex and giving blowjobs. So...
Yeah.
So unceremoniously, the satyr just decides to do the vaginal sex. Additionally, like, she's suspended in a sulfurous pond. Like, we're not going to talk about, like, the danger bacteria. Of, like, embolisms or anything. Like,
we're not going to talk about these issues. I mean, I get this whole free love concept and everything, but this seems a little unhealthy.
It's scary. It's well, I mean, it's reckless abandon, really. It's this kind of...
Hey, Diane. He's magical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is magical. His dick is magical, too. And so is that...
Maybe it protects against... Maybe it protects against all of these problems.
It doesn't protect against a different particular problem, though. Nope. So, Diane, Allison wanders back to her cabin, and she sang an America song under her breath. What? Why is this in the story? Why is this in the story?
We need to know the time period, I guess.
Here are these really wonderful lyrics because the words escaped her. Da 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 da. What would you say that is? Do you want to sing that together with me?
Oh God. No, not particularly.
It's gonna be Girl of Infinite. Da 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 da. That's not about. It's not an America song. It's not even an American. It's an America song.
It's a
Simon.
No. I mean, there are. Oh God, Girl from Ipanema has so many goddamn covers. but it's a bossa nova song. It's Brazilian, Portuguese. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking. Gosh, I don't know the original artist. Fuck.
Somehow it's just the kind of...
I've heard so many covers of this song, so...
Gonna also argue that, like, having, like, elevator music be what Allison just, like, returns to the commune with kind of deflates the whole experience. What just happened? I'm on a song tangent, but... So I wonder if that's what it is. I don't really know. So Allison gets back to the commune.
She gets back to the cabin. And everyone's having an orgy. They just started without her.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, was kind of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You have a note here about... she talks to Susie.
I think these Susie. Girls are satyrs.
And Susie and Allison's like, so what's up with that satyr?
So my note with that I had is that all the girls of the commune are satyrs nymphs.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it on the satyr with I think it's Susie who says it. He represents the forces opposed to urbanity, decorum, and civilization itself. All these boys here at the commune play at such things, but that dude out there is the real thing. And it was kind of like, okay, so has he had all the girls? Like, that's my assumption here.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Apparently so.
That when they want the real deal, the real wilderness, they go find Seder.
Which, if anything, this guy, the satyr, is kind of this, what do you want to call it? He's kind of this metaphorical embodiment of the free love era. Like, he is anti-civilization. He is anti, you know, like, establishment. He is the wilderness. He is, like, free love, you know, on and on and on. And he's this, you know, this 7-foot-tall blonde boy with blue eyes wearing a wolf pelt with horrible toenails and stinks to high hell. Like, that's...
Blue-eyed that's, blonde. That's
the wilderness?
It's an Anglo-Saxon.
I mean, I don't want to say that he's white, but, like, it's implied.
That's the implication. That's...
And he's the real deal, huh?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay. I mean, we're kind of getting the image of this hippie commune. They are very white. The men are very heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And the women really just want
to. They have enough money to purchase this big, really nice, idyllic farm.
Yep. And they have not had to actually work that farm yet, as far as I could tell. Mm-hmm. Those cows milk themselves.
I guess. I mean, they just fuck all day. So, like, it's like, oh, we all pitch in. Yeah, I know. No, I think mostly the men pitch. So, alas. But there's this, call it, it's the same sort of... New England utopian community. It's like all the lovely rich white people go and have a lovely time.
Yes, exactly. It's just like so perfect. And it's like, I really enjoy it. Like, I'm enjoying this as like a short erotica, kind of a fun time. But it is also a bit like... Yeah, this works purely because Allison's only there for like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, if she were there any longer, this farm would have like blown up by now.
Okay, but that's the best twist I could even imagine. She leaves and the farm just blows up.
Yeah, so it just like catches on fire.
Mushroom experiment gone wrong.
Yep, it's They can't survive without their hippie queen.
Mm-hmm. It's... Oh, man. I like that. So Allison gets back to the cabin, and she's, you know, pulled up her pants, but she's just... how do I say this?
Leaking?
I mean, I was gonna say she's like... fucking stuff like a Twinkie with cream filling at this point.
Oh, that, so
like,
that works.
I'm glad that you... Yeah, I'm glad you took the more diplomatic route, because that's also what she says. The satyr is leaking out of her, basically. Which is gross, but there you go.
Yeah, and Susie kind of jokes, like, well, I guess he's your satyr now, ha ha ha. And, that's just like, hey, we're the rain stopped. We're gonna go have a weenie roast out on the lawn, and if you want to join us after you eat your grilled cheese and have a nap, feel free.
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly non-sexual wiener roast too. Like that, the sexual comes after the wiener roast. Amazingly.
Yes, that's a surprise. I was fully expecting some more. I don't know, just the more jokes.
Diane, I have just happened upon a theory, and it makes me very angry. And I'm going to save it for the end, if I remember it. And it involves some wordplay. And I'm very bothered by this, because it seems too obvious, but... I'll just...
All right.
We'll come back to it.
You can hold up.
Okay, so what happens next?
Pretty much, they all go... they're all sitting outside around the fire having their hot dog roast, and Allison is kind of like chatting with them and kind of is helping the commune discover things about each other, because she is hippie queen holding hippie court. And she notes that Art, whose nickname is also Little Kaiser, because they made a joke about how he's like really kind of crazy and possibly inbred. And that he was in the Atacama Desert at some point, and that it turns out that Seth spent an entire time, like, spent time in the same desert, and that they had lived together. Yeah, right. But somehow they had lived in the same house for, like, all summer, and they hadn't realized that or known that about each other until Allison comes and enlightens them all. But at some point, Allison's like, oh, it's too hot by the fire. I'm going to go wander off into the woods, as she does. And then she smells him before she heard him. And she swooned. It's Seder.
Oh, Mr. Darcy.
Oh, Mr. Darcy. Ooh. This is something that...
Can I just say that, like, the trope of, like, oh, I smelled him before I heard him, that could be played romantically, I think. I don't think that's, like, out of, you know, the realm of possibility of being played, like, genuinely romantically.
Oh, not at all. In this sense, it doesn't work because we know that he smells rank.
It's horrible, but she doesn't care.
She's into it. This is her... This is the thing that she likes. And
also, apparently she just can't go for a fucking walk without, like... She's just like, oh, now we're having sex again.
They are catnip for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, pretty much the satyr comes back. Satyr is back. He comes upon her, gets her out of all her clothes, and they start going for it. Like, and he's just feeling her up, and then they actually start talking. And Alice is like, where are you from? And he's like, the mountains. And while they're having sex, and then she's like, hey, I want to be on top. He's like, okay, sure. Which is agency, oh. I suppose. It's like, this is really interesting.
It's agency, but... Holy... Okay, so he lifted her like before and pushed her onto his erect cock, her pussy still sopping with his earlier ejaculate. She lay one hand on his neck for balance and tweaked his nipples with the other. Let me go on top. Okay. And that's... sopping? A sopping pussy?
That brings so many images that aren't delightful. I mean, it's...
Her pussy is both swollen and sopping. This is not a pleasant experience for... anyone but Alice.
I can't even think it would be a pleasant experience for her because that's all on your legs.
She's just like, you know, doing these, what are they called? Like volleyball crouches at this point, I think. Just kind of
she is squatting up and down.
And she's like, okay, well, you came in me once, but I actually really love blowjobs, so, psych. And she just kind of, like, switches, and finishes him off.
Yeah, and he, tasted like a mouthful of sunlight scented with cedar boughs. So,
yeah, I bet he did.
I mean, if this can be believed, he truly is a forest god.
I mean, to be fair, like, I guess, Allison has had... maybe she's kind of gotten acclimated though. Like maybe she's gotten into it because like, at some point she mentions like how much she enjoyed like sucking on like musky trucker balls. So like, maybe this is her kink. Like honestly, at this point,
it seems like it. And of course they're like laughing and everything, giggling together and having a frolicking good time together.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's kind of romantic. And then he says something weird. He says, you tricked me. I don't know what that means.
I assumed it was kind of like she finished him by blowing him, and he just prefers...
traditional.
Vaginal sex?
That is, that's the most that I can make sense of it, I think.
I think that gets into, again, how the story ends, that he has a goal, and the goal, frankly, creeps me the fuck out.
Despite it being very short, it is very dense.
It is very, very action-packed. And speaking of action, another scene.
Yes, we're going to talk about... this is the moment. This is the moment when I said earlier that I was like, oh no, Jacqueline's going to do this with Seth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the moment where she subverted expectations and I was delighted. Pretty much Allison returns to the campfire after her time with Seder, and Seth is the only one there, and he's either drunk or high, maybe both, and he's talking to himself, and he pees on the embers of the fire, whips his penis out, pees on it, and he's kind of giggling, and then he's like mumbling about how he's gonna have sex with something, and it's like Allison is like approaching, getting closer. She realizes he's kind of like singing to himself, and then he's kind of has like was looking like leering at Allison, and Allison gave him a look that said she might have sucked him off right then and there if he was not standing in a rancid steam of his own piss and charcoal. She walked past and up into the cabin, and said she just like walks past him, ignores him, and goes straight into Susie's room. Doesn't even knock, interrupts Susie and Rick, her boyfriend, and joins them in a threesome. And I fully thought, oh no, this is going to be the moment where Seth goes and like stumbles, trying to like attack her or try to like convince her to have sex. It gets really creepy and aggressive, and that satyr is going to pop in and save the day, because this is what always happens in paranormal romances or erotica, is that the paranormal creature saves the heroine from rape. That's like a common theme. And it didn't happen. Allison took care of it herself. She was just like, like, gosh, like, never ever kind of thing, and just walks off. And I was like, Jacqueline Deterre, gold star. That was a solid moment, because I was like, here we go. Like, we're gonna get this. It's gonna be really annoying. This is everything I hate, because it's using like a woman's fear and, you know, everything just so that you could go and show how great your hero is. And it wasn't.
Which, I mean,
Allison was just like, loser, and walked off, and then went and had more agency and found Susie and Rick and joined them.
And they have a time. And then, like, this kind of gets... This story goes rapid fire. Again, there's no, like, cohesive structure. There's not a, you know, rising action, falling action, denouement.
There's no chapter breaks to divide things. Because it's...
No. We get vignette after vignette after kind of section. So the next section, very quickly, this is where we get to the issue.
That's so, a diplomatic way to put it.
Allison's like, yeah. Allison is like, okay, well, Catherine, you look like you were really happy with them. Why didn't you stay with them? And Catherine says, I couldn't get pregnant. And this is where we get into this part of the story.
All right, it's like the satyrs are looking for ladies to build their commune.
Mm-hmm. To build their kind of
harem.
What do you, tribe? Herb?
Herb.
Herb. Good God. Herd. Group. I don't really know how to.
I wrote in a note, and I said, because Catherine was the one who suggested that Allison go to the hot spring. It was like it was Susie and Catherine together, but they both like decided, like, oh yeah, Allison should totally go. So is Catherine like a recruitment agent? Gathers up all the interested ladies and sends them off to the hot springs.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. That's a very
promising recruits
idea.
Get drafted into the satyr harem. Also, do they get jerseys?
Mm-hmm. I would expect that you're going to get like a monogram like, jacket.
This is
if you don't,
this is a terrible harem.
Ridiculous.
I'm going to build my own harem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Allison could do it. She's got the agency. So Allison meets the satyr, has sex again. This is sex number three with the satyr. And then she bids Susie and Rick goodbye. She walks up to the hot springs again. And this is where we get to the story. And she finds the satyr, who's just appears as if he had been waiting for her. And And this is the end of the story. She says, I'm pregnant. And he grinned, come with me. Where? Into the mountains. My people have a home hidden in the wilderness. How many? I have four brother satyrs.
Yes.
Satyrs is in quotation marks, by the way. In my pride. Pride. And we have six human women and three boy childs. Huh. Allison did not know what to say to the fact. She had nothing in her mind but the image of her naked body lying on a bearskin by firelight. And she's like, okay, well, what is it like? And she wanted to think that there was something otherworldly about him, and instead felt that everything about him was otherworldly. Somehow he was what she had always wanted. In the summer, we live in tree houses. In the winter, we live underground, in such a home that even the biggest fire does not light the ceiling. The sound of that makes me want to paint the ceiling, he laughed. Every human woman, even my mother, says the same thing. Maybe she did paint it, only you can't see it, Allison noted. That gave the satyr pause. He nodded and led her into the trees.
Allison did not get a jersey.
That's the end of the story. Okay, that just sounds like a Ted Bundy thing, though.
One of the things that, kind of just, like, noting this is that it seems that they're looking for a very particular type of lady. Because if they all say the same thing about maybe I'm going to paint the ceiling with stars, the cave ceiling, like, they're all, like, having the same thought process.
Yeah.
So that they, I guess that my theory of this is a recruitment, like, they're recruiting, and Catherine would have been perfect, but she can't get pregnant. So she's a recruitment agent.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm left with more questions than I am answers. At the end of this story, there are a lot of aspects to it that I...
Yeah,
and again, this
might
is the
be
prequel,
more.
So maybe there are answers in the full story. But, you know, I'm wondering, she kind of knew what the satyr was after, what the satyrs really were after, because Catherine told her I couldn't get pregnant. So it's only been like a day or two. So how would she... Like, is that... Do you
no.
know that fast?
No, generally not.
I don't
not.
Think so. No, like, so I wonder if, like, so I wonder if Allison's like, oh, I know how to get with the satyrs for good. Just say I'm pregnant and they'll accept me.
Yeah, though there is a description, because right before, like, the night before she decides, like, to leave, and she doesn't have, she pretty much refuses to have sex, and she goes and she cuddles with Catherine in her room, and there's a description about how her breasts feel heavy, Allison's own, and so I think that's she knows she really is, but it's kind of a ain't no one knows that fast.
I know, like, magic. Unless, like, the satyr has, like, accelerated semen, like, accelerated breeder, like, it's,
but this,
you know,
is once again
on
a
on.
This is toying with the theory of, is he magical or is he not, because there's elements of it and then elements of, well, we don't really know.
I mean, here's the thing, if Allison wants that for her life, she's free to have it. Like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, being a mother and living that wilderness life and, you know, doing that thing, that's fine. But there's also this kind of, like, Allison's, you know, she goes into the wilderness to find something real, and what she finds is basically a heterocentric domestic living situation, and it's this kind of reproducing of this hegemonic power structure, but this is my theoretical training showing through. But Allison goes into the wilderness looking for something real. She's looking for that really, that rough experience, that kind of finding, carving out her own piece of the world. And the other people that she meets at the commune, Seth, for instance, show that, you know, that's not what she's after. That's not what she's looking for. That's not what's going to give her what she needs. And so finally she runs into this kind of demigod-like figure who is kind of, again, this metaphysical embodiment of everything she wants. It's, you know, this creature is the wilderness. It is the bush. It is the rough
life that she wants. It is, you know, all the sex she could ever want. It's a fulfillment, a place, you know, etc. And so then it hit me. It hit me with utter horror. Perhaps the reason that this thing is called the Satyr is because it's wordplay on a creature that can sate her.
Oh, no. I think you're right.
I hate it. So, hey, Allison is living her best life. So, Diane, what do you think? Did you enjoy this? Would you recommend this?
I'm going to say on Kindle Unlimited, it was free. It was on Kindle Unlimited. So that was already really pretty great. Like, I fully expected we're going to get one and done and it's just going to be whatever. But this was pretty interesting. And you can also, like, how we've gone about an hour and 40 minutes in talking about...
Oh, fuck.
Gavin, I apologize.
Gavin, we're so sorry.
There's a lot of meat in here to talk about. It's a really interesting.
So let's wrap this up. So you do recommend it. I also recommend it. It's fun. It's not a typical erotica in the sense that erotica usually has, like, set up one long sex scene, usually lackluster ending. In this case, it's kind of like a collection of a bunch of small sex scenes in this very kind of clustered, glittery writing style, and it's fascinating. The writing is actually very good. I just wish that more time had been put into the structure. So yes, I do absolutely recommend it. So that was Thanksgiving Hot Springs Satyr, an erotic fairy tale. The Satyr and the School Marm.
I think maybe book two.
I don't know where the School Marm comes into it. And you can get that on Kindle Unlimited for free, as Diane pointed that out. And you can find that on the Amazon Marketplace, of course. So, Diane, tell the patrons, where can they find you should they want you?
If you desperately need to speak with me, you can find me on my Tumblr. I don't know how long that's going to stay up. Apparently, Tumblr's deleting blogs now. Oh no. But you can find me. I'll probably go and figure out how to make a Twitter at some point. Make a Twitter somewhere.
Make a Twitter.
Can find me on Tumblr at ContraPerry. If I make a Twitter, I'll probably figure out something else. I don't know. I'll figure something else. So that way if someone needs to talk to me, they can talk to me. How about you, Jared? Where can people find you?
Well, if people want to find me, they can find me on Twitter at Hattie Palms, HattiePalms, and that's the best place to find me. And if you want to find the show, if you want to find more about the show and connect with us on social media, you could connect with the Red Light Library on Twitter. That is at Red Light Library. Or you could find us at redlightlibrarypodcast.wordpress.com for the show notes and even more episodes. And we recently passed that good sex number, 69 episodes, and we're so thrilled about that. So thank you. Thank you, listener, for tuning in. And Diane, I sincerely hope that I never meet anybody who... that I ever have to smell from while they're up in a tree.
Oh, goodness. Or if you do, that it's a wonderful smell of some kind. Even
they
then.
Don't fucking smell like vanilla and jasmine. I'm gonna scream. So, anyway, well, thank you, patrons, for listening, and see you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.